Welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Friday, November 10th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me today. We've got some big items to share with you here. What's coming up, I'm going to play a clip for you from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and then a reaction to that from a man I've interviewed, Brian Berletic, and also bring you some additional information. A lot of people are leaving the support circle for RFK Jr. over his what appears to be imperialism or support for imperialism and a pro-war stance, which seems very, it doesn't seem like that's not the RFK that we thought we knew. I've seen people asking if he's been blackmailed or something. I don't know. But there is a schism even within the RFK Jr. campaign right now over this Israel versus Palestine issue. And we're going to play a clip on that and have a little bit of a reaction. And then in addition, I interviewed today for the first time Colonel Douglas McGregor. And you may know Colonel McGregor. He's quite an accomplished man. And I'm not going to go through his whole resume, but he served in a high-level fashion with the United States military through Desert Storm and many other things. And he's been, I think, one of the best geopolitical analysts on both Ukraine versus Russia and then also right now the Middle East situation. So I was able to interview him today. I'm going to actually jump to that interview pretty quickly. It's about a 30-minute interview, even a little bit less than that. And he makes an important announcement in this interview that he has accepted the offer to be a CEO of a new organization that may, in fact, help lay out a path for all of us in America who are feeling very disillusioned with the parties, the GOP, which is run by incompetent morons, I guess it seems, and the DNC, which is run by like child mutilating lunatics, transgender pushing lunatics on the left. We're all disillusioned, and we're finding that a lot of the candidates that we once supported, like Trump or perhaps for some of you RFK Jr., turn out to just be on board with the same kind of imperialism that John McCain always stood for. And there is a growing sense among many of us, perhaps you as well, that elections are not going to solve these issues. And that's why the title of my podcast here today is about how we really can't vote our way out of this. And that's not a call for, an armed revolution or anything like that. In fact, we're going to talk more about how things actually might change. But it's probably not through elections, because no matter who we vote for, we get warmongers. No matter who we vote for, we get people that put America last. Have you noticed this, right? No matter who we vote for, government gets bigger, the money printing machine continues, the border just becomes more porous, more people flooding in, no matter who we vote for. I mean, frankly, if we all had voted for Ron Paul when it mattered, maybe this would have been different. But, that opportunity came and went, quite a few years ago. What we have right now is a situation where it's very hard to find someone that actually seems to stand for the things that matter. And frankly, at this point, the closest candidate that I've found, or in this case interviewed, is Dr. Shiva. I mean, and he's running as an independent, and he just says it like it is. And he's with us on all these issues, by the way. And I think the first time I interviewed Dr. Shiva, he was so critical of all the other candidates, including RFK Jr. and Donald Trump and others. He was so critical with, really biting commentary on them. And I was a little taken aback by that. But now in retrospect today, I kind of understand where he's coming from on that. And so I'm going to reach out to Dr. Shiva and actually invite him back on. But I recently interviewed him just, a week or two ago. And if you missed, I guess it was 2 weeks. If you missed that interview, it's definitely worth hearing. Definitely. I mean, again, he does not have kind words for RFK Jr. or Trump or, frankly, anybody else. But if you understand where we are, what's actually happening, it kind of makes sense why he doesn't have kind words for lots of people. So anyway, my interview today, though, is Colonel Douglas McGregor. And that's coming up in just a few minutes. And again, the duration on that is a little bit under 30 minutes. And I will continue on the other side of that. Now, on a practical note, I want to thank all of you who have supported us in the last 24 hours during our big Black Friday event, which is healthrangerstore.com/Black Friday. And we've had such an outpouring of support. It vastly exceeded my expectation. There's been a lot more outpouring, you know, more purchases, more people perusing the catalog, more people shopping. I mean, we have, I don't know what to say other than just thank you. I mean, we do need your support in order to function. We do need your support in order to fund the operations, expand the platforms, pay for bandwidth, expand our laboratory, all these things that we do. So here's what we have done just in the last couple hours before I started recording this. We have put together a kind of a thank you immune support super pack for you that is an incredible savings. It's available beginning at 11 a.m. Central today, Friday, and it's available only while supplies last. Okay, this is really generous. Check it out. In this immune support super pack, and you may have to search for it at healthrangerstore.com. Just go there again. Immune support super pack. It contains the following. You're going to love this. Plant-based quercetin. You know, a bottle of that. 60 capsules of quercetin. And you know what quercetin is good for. I mean, hopefully we all know about quercetin since the last, you know, few years of what we've all lived through. Secondly, it contains a bottle of NAC. N-acetylcysteine. Yes. The NAC that the FDA doesn't want anybody to have. 500 milligrams, 90 capsules in each bottle. All right. In addition, and this is why it's such a great immune support pack. In addition, it contains organic elderberry and echinacea tincture, 2 ounces, which is 59 milliliters. And you know, elderberry and echinacea, it's an amazing combination. And that formula, by the way, is Ed Group's Global Healing Center formula. So you know it is extremely high-end because that's what Ed Group insists upon. In addition to that, it's our non-GMO vitamin C, 60 capsules of 600 milligrams each. This is vitamin C that's not from GMO corn. It's not from China either. So this is the high-end vitamin C. In addition, we include in this pack a plant-based vitamin D plus prickly pear drink mix. This is an immune support drink mix. It's got 30 packets in it, a total of 90 grams. And you just put it in water and mix it up. And it's a mild, but also very nutritious drink mix. Prickly pear, cactus, plus, you know, vitamin D. And then finally, magnesium glycinate, high absorption capsules. It's 90 capsules, 500 milligrams each. This is the high-end magnesium, not the cheap, you know, low-end garbage, whatever, you know, elemental magnesium that you find out that this is magnesium glycinate. So those six things, okay, all together, the quercetin, the NAC, the elderberry and echinacea, the non-GMO vitamin C, the vitamin D3 plus prickly pear drink mix with 30 packs in it, plus the magnesium glycinate, 90 capsules, all of that together, $99.95. So that's an incredible deal. You won't find anything like that out there. And it's all, of course, laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology, as we do, you know, with all our products that we sell, E. coli testing, salmonella testing, yeast and mold testing, and so on. So all that, less than $100. And it's available only while supplies last, which might be only 24 hours. I'm not sure. Maybe it lasts 2 days. I don't know. But check it out now, healthrangerstore.com. Search for Immune Support Super Pack and take advantage of that. We just put that together as a thank you. And we appreciate all your support. And we want to help you get, you know, the cleanest nutrients and the cleanest foods and superfoods that can help you get prepared for what's coming, for where things are headed. It's not a pretty picture. All right, so first I want to play a little clip for you. This is of RFK Jr. talking about why, I mean, imperialism, a beachhead in the Middle East, and why America needs to support Israel. And it sounds, what he's saying, it sounds like full-blown Zionism, frankly. So this is from the Danny Haifong show on YouTube. And Danny Haifong is interviewing Brian Berletic. And we're going to hear Brian's response to this. But I also want to give credit to Danny Haifong, because Danny has done some pretty incredible work. His last name, Haifong, is spelled, if you want to look him up, it's spelled H-A-I-P-H-O-N-G. And, of course, Brian Berletic is from The New Atlas. And, you know, whether or not you agree with everything that these gentlemen talk about, I've found Brian Berletic's analysis to be pretty spot on. I don't agree with him on everything involving Taiwan, however, but for the most part, I find his analysis very insightful and rational, and that counts. So check out this clip. It's a few minutes, and then we'll be back after that with Colonel Douglas McGregor. Check this out.
Here's RFK Jr., his latest comments on Israel. Of course, RFK Jr. has come under much fire for being a very Zionist in his political positions regarding his election. He's received a lot of criticism of late, especially for those who are opposed to wars in the Middle East, opposed to the brutality against the Palestinian people. But here is RFK Jr. saying the quiet part out loud, but kind of unintentionally. He's just telling it how he sees it. He's giving Israel kind of a tongue bath here, saying Israel is so important. But I think he reveals kind of some fundamental facts that I definitely want you to comment on, Brian. So here we go.
And Israel is critical. And the reason it's critical is because it's a bulwark for us in the Mideast. It's almost like having an aircraft carrier in the Mideast. It's our oldest ally. It's been our ally for 75 years. It has been an incredible ally for us in terms of the technology, the exchange. And, you know, in building the Iron Dome, which we paid a lot for, has also taught us enormously about how to defend ourselves at home from Israel. So those military expenditures are all going, 75% of it goes to U.S. companies under the agreement, under the MOU. But if you look at what's happening in the Mideast now, Iran is now the closest allies to Iran are Russia and China. Iran also controls all of Venezuela's oil. Hezbollah is in Venezuela. They have propped up the Maduro regime, and so they control that oil supply. BRICS, Saudi Arabia is now joining BRICS. So those countries will control 90% of the oil in the world. If Israel disappears, the vacuum in the Mideast, which is, you know, Israel is our ambassador, it's our presence, our beachhead in the Mideast, and it gives us ears and eyes in the Mideast. It gives us intelligence. It gives us the capacity to influence affairs in the Mideast. If Israel disappeared, Russia and China would be controlling the Mideast, and they control 90% of the world's oil supply, and that would be cataclysmic for U.S. national security. So that's the answer.
So, I mean, just what more can we say?
It's just unabashed imperialism. He's basically saying Israel is our colony in the Middle East. If we lose control of Israel, because all of our other so-called allies, captured states, they're pivoting away from us, then we'll just be out of luck. And just think about what he's saying. The United States on the other side of the planet will have no control over a region where it's not even located in on a map. That's what he's saying. And so I always warn people, and you'll never see me do a whole video about U.S. elections because they're meaningless. All of the people involved are, it's just a show to keep people believing that they somehow have some role in determining what's going on.
All right, good comments there by Brian Berletic. And I want to add to that, you know, it strikes me as so bizarre that the United States has never really thought about engaging other nations of the world in a fair trade situation. Just to say, hey, what if we bought your oil and then we paid you money, and then you delivered the oil. What if we just did that? Instead, the way the U.S. empire operates is, oh, we're going to set up a beachhead. We're going to threaten you with nuclear bombs. We're going to coerce you. We're going to weaponize the monetary system. We're going to carry out, you know, regime change operations against you. We're going to unleash the CIA, cause color revolutions. We're going to assassinate your leaders. You know, it's just one scheme after another. You know, whether we're talking about Libya or Iraq or, you know, I guess a long list of countries, hundreds of countries in over the last few decades, you know, the U.S. just cannot engage other nations in a, I don't know what you call it, a gentleman's way. You know, it's like, hey, we all produce something, you know, you produce microchips, we produce corn, let's trade. You know, it's nothing like that. It's like, do what we want or we'll bomb you to death. You know, like that's the U.S. empire approach. And that's why Israel needs to exist in the Middle East. And that's what RFK Jr. is actually talking about. And, oh, we need Israel because otherwise, you know, how would we threaten all these Middle Eastern countries, basically? I mean, that's, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he's saying. And, you know, what really strikes me as very contradictory in this, and understand, I've said many very complimentary things about RFK Jr. over the years. And he's done extraordinary work on the issue of vaccines and exposing Fauci and writing the book, The Truth About Fauci, and so on. He's done extraordinary things. And I thought he was opposed to censorship until recently. Now he seems to be on the side of censoring people who are critical of Israel. So, I mean, I don't know how free speech suddenly got thrown out the window with RFK Jr. But here we have RFK Jr. saying, you know, we need Israel to exist so that we can have access to the oil and fossil fuels in the Middle East. But yet domestically, RFK Jr. is strongly opposed to domestic energy production in the United States. Strongly opposed. I mean, I've interviewed him about these topics, and he wants to shut down coal, you know, for example. And he's no fan of big oil. He would like to see big oil really... the infrastructure reduced in America. So how is it that you can be on one hand in favor of supporting Israel so that we have access to energy in the Middle East and all the billions of dollars that that costs, you know, to run this beachhead called Israel in the Middle East, when it's so much easier to do what Trump did? Just drill for oil in America. Just have our own domestic energy supply. Just mine, you know, coal and have scrubbers in the coal-fired power plants and make clean coal in America, which is some of the cleanest coal in the world when it's treated properly, by the way. So it's like, what do you have against America? Why can't we produce energy in America and then not deal with wars in the Middle East, man? That's my question to RFK or anybody who shares his policies. And Biden shut down domestic energy production in the United States from day one, shut down pipelines, shut down oil exploration. You know, Trump, to his credit, and obviously I've criticized Trump on a number of issues, including Operation Warp Speed. But one thing that Trump did very well was that he opened up so much domestic energy production in America that he made us a net exporter of energy to the point where the Middle East couldn't embargo us. They couldn't hurt us because we were producing so much domestically. And that's actually strategically a very smart position to be in. You should not depend on oil exports out of, you know, Qatar or wherever in order to run your economy. You should domestically produce your energy. I mean, that's what makes Russia strong, by the way. Russia doesn't depend on energy imports. I mean, they're an energy exporter. Why do you think Russia was able to survive all the economic sanctions? We need strong domestic energy production in America. And RFK Jr. is very much opposed to that, but somehow in favor of using Israel to protect our access to oil in the Middle East. And to me, that stands as an absurd contradiction. I take more of a Ron Paul approach on this one. It's like, hey, let's produce the energy at home and stay out of foreign wars. How about that? And let's stop sending Israel billions of dollars. What are they doing with it? Yep. Dropping bombs? I mean, I mean, using helicopter gunships on, you know, civilian vehicles. In fact, I got to play this. Check this is shocking. We'll get to Colonel Douglas McGregor here in a second. You got to see this video of what it's like to be living in Gaza and to be just freaking bombed as you're sheltering in a hospital or on the hospital grounds. This is what it's like. Check this out. It's horrifying. Here it is. So you see that? I mean, again, no matter which side you take on this whole conflict, this war, that's some pretty frightening stuff right there. And hospitals have been bombed. And, you know, why can't RFK Jr. just say, hey, it's wrong to bomb civilians? Could we just say that? Could have that as a starting point? It's wrong to bomb civilians. It's wrong to bomb women and children. It's wrong to bomb cancer patients in hospitals. You know, I mean, Dennis Kucinich is saying those things, you know, former congressman, and he was the former campaign manager for RFK Jr., no longer the campaign manager. And I don't have any inside baseball on that, but perhaps this is the reason former Congressman Kucinich is no longer the campaign manager. I don't know. Perhaps it is. But you would think that RFK Jr. could at least come out and say, hey, it's wrong to bomb civilians. It's wrong to bomb hospitals. But apparently, you know, the Zionist influence in his campaign, on the money side, no doubt, is very, very strong. And he is not yet willing to say that. So I hope and pray that RFK Jr. is able to reconsider his position. Because if he doesn't, I think his campaign will be over soon. It's probably a very limited window of opportunity to attract people to his independent campaign. But to do that, you have to think like an independent. You've got to be independent. And if you say, oh, yeah, of course, we have to, you know, have a beachhead in the Middle East, and we have to support the military-industrial complex, and we have to essentially, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, we have to fund all these bombs and weapons and let Israel do whatever it wants, that's not independent thinking. That's establishment thinking. And we don't need, none of us need another establishment candidate, period. And I won't support one. Hey, one more short video I've got to show you because this is all coming out. This is incredible. Check out this video. All right, this is a video of the cars from October 7th. The cars and vehicles that are all bombed out and melted and were on fire or what have you. And we are told from the corporate media that this was all done by Hamas with just rifle fire and I guess paragliders. But look at this. These vehicles, especially the ones you saw previously there, we'll loop this, that were blown up and melted and firebombed. This is not the kind of damage that happens from rifle fire, folks. This is the kind of damage that happens from like helicopter gunship fire. And it's pretty clear that these vehicles you're seeing right now, these have been hit by, you know, high caliber gunship fire and maybe, you know, air to ground rockets from helicopters. And guess what? Hamas does not have helicopters. Means the IDF did this. So almost all these vehicles, of course, had people in them, and most of those people were Israelis. And if you wonder why the body count is so high, you should maybe ask the IDF helicopter pilots why the body count is so high, because they were just firing indiscriminately. They were reloading, emptying entire magazines and emptying, you know, rockets or whatever they had into all the vehicles, civilian vehicles, everything. They're just hitting everything on the ground and then just reloading and doing it again. And that's why you have such high casualties. Yeah, the IDF shot Israelis. I mean, they blew them up. There are probably more horrifying videos yet to come out. We'll keep an eye on that. Now we're going to go to the interview with Colonel Douglas McGregor. This is the first time I've interviewed Colonel McGregor. I've been a fan of his analysis, simply because he's obviously a very high IQ individual. He's very intelligent. Whether you agree or disagree with his analysis, you are forced to agree that his analysis is based on evidence, experience, wisdom, and rationality. And one of the things I like about Colonel Douglas McGregor is he's not a partisan. He's not loyal to any particular political party or any, you know, candidate like Trump, let's say, nor Biden, obviously. Colonel McGregor, agree with him or disagree, is his own man. He arrives at his own conclusions through a process that must be respected. And his on-the-ground experience, firsthand experience, in his vast military career is something that is not easily obtained, and it is something that we must listen to carefully. So I was very honored to be able to have this conversation with him, and I think the next 30 minutes that you're going to hear here are very important minutes to understand what is happening now and what's about to happen. So enjoy this interview, and I'll be back on the other side with more news and commentary. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we're joined by Colonel Douglas McGregor, who I think has been the best on-point analyst of the situation, both in Ukraine and Russia, as well as the Middle East currently. Welcome, Colonel Douglas McGregor. It's an honor to have you on the show today, sir.
Well, thank you.
And I understand also that you have just accepted a job as the president of an organization, OurCountryOurChoice.com. So congratulations.
Actually, it's a chief executive officer.
Oh, I'm sorry. A chief executive CEO. Thank you for the correction.
That's fine.
CEO, Our Country, Our Choice. Could you give us a quick description of what the organization focuses on?
Yeah, this is an organization that was founded to unite Americans across party lines. We determined that there are lots of Americans in both the Republican and Democratic parties who actually share traditional conservative values and are tired of the divisiveness of the country. They want to put an end to the overseas interventions. They want to restore the rule of law, crack down on the criminality inside the country, secure our borders. That includes ultimately securing our ports, literal waters, and rounding up and expelling the illegals. Electoral integrity is a big issue. And finally, stopping the sexualization of our children. Those are the basic issues. And that's where we try to focus most of our attention and resources.
Well, those seem like high priority items to me. And I think our audience would agree. And so let me segue with that, because it seems like the U.S. Congress is Israel first, Ukraine second, and America last. What's your response to that?
U.S. Congress is really me first, and then everything else that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And what comes next is a function of how, to the extent to which the individuals are rewarded for their support financially. Remember, you've got a House of Representatives where people serve for 2 years, which means they spend 50%+ of their time trying to be reelected. They're starved for money. And so anyone that comes up and says, look, if you'll support me, I'm the pharmaceutical industry, for instance, or I'm the advocate for country X or whatever, then we can put additional funds into your political action committee and help you with your reelection.
Yes.
That gets a lot of attention. And that's how Washington runs. The Senate's a little bit better, though no less greedy. In fact, more greedy probably, but they're there for 6 years, so they're not constantly trying to be reelected, but they certainly don't miss the opportunity to enrich themselves.
To that point, one of the things that you've covered over the last couple of years in your commentary and analysis of the Ukraine situation, and by the way, I really appreciate your interviews with Judge Napolitano. I think I've watched every one of them for quite some time, is you talk about the incompetence of the decision-making in the U.S. State Department, and yet the fact that there is so much financial reward for the military-industrial complex, let's say, the weapons industry, but a lack of competence in how to even deploy weapons in a way that would reach effective goals. Is this, could we say that is it a racket? Is that an appropriate term to use to describe that, or how would you describe it?
Well, you can certainly use the word racket. I would start at the top with the simple statement that we have no national strategy. national strategy involves military power. It involves economic development. It involves cultivating good relations for the purposes of commerce and business overseas. You know, you go down the list. Grand strategy consists of many, many things, including, of course, development of technology and its incorporation, integration into society and the military. We really don't have that. What we have are a set of loosely defined interests, and we're driven by those. And those interests are not always national interests. For instance, I would argue that we have no national strategic interest per se in Eastern Ukraine. The only interest we've ever had in Ukraine was to promote peace and stability in the region, which is something we haven't done. In fact, we've done the opposite. And in the Middle East, we certainly don't have any interest in cultivating a regional war against Israel and the United States. But again, we've set those things aside in favor of what I would call current interests or financially rewarding interests or both. That means the flavor of the month is we're all going to rush, claim that Ukraine is some sort of pristine democracy and that we all have an obligation to defend it against the evil Russians, who are some version of what they were under the Soviet Union or whatever. It's all nonsense. It makes no sense. There's no one in charge. You know, there's no one in the White House, per se, as far as I can tell. And the people who are there are simply riding this ship of state wherever it takes them. So we're in a lot of trouble as a nation. We don't yes. really define our fundamental interests, and we don't essentially link means and ends. We have no sense of limitations. Well, you know, we think our resources are unlimited, and they're not.
Then going from what you just said, how much credibility is the United States losing on the world stage? For example, Antony Blinken in his recent trip to the Middle East, he was not treated like a U.S. official used to be treated, let's say 20 years ago. Not at all. He was thrown out and made to wait and whatever, and largely ignored. Have we lost what we once had now as a nation?
Oh, I think we've been in trouble for a long time. You've got to go back and consider that certainly up until World War I, with a possible exception of the Spanish-American War, which was a war we could have avoided and subsequently regretted for various reasons. But really, up until World War I, we were a nation that focused preeminently on building prosperity at home and pursuing peace abroad. In other words, the formula for success for the United States was, if we build our economic foundation well, we raise our standard of living, and we cultivate the emergence of an educated, intelligent, hardworking population, the rest of the world will notice, and they'll want to imitate us. They'll want to admire us. And there was nothing in the Constitution or in the minds of the people that founded this country about intervening in other people's affairs. In fact, when Thomas Jefferson suggested that we should join with the revolutionary French, at the time, as you know, under Napoleon, and help them spread their quote-unquote revolution across the world, especially in Europe, Washington and Hamilton, who both liked Jefferson, concluded that Jefferson had lost his mind. And Washington made the point that no nation can be expected to move beyond the limits of its own interests. Mm-hmm. We had no interest in spreading revolution anywhere. We had only one interest, overriding strategic interest, and that was to secure the North American continent so that English-speaking people conquered and ruled the nation from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and that within that framework, we would have a republic that was somewhat democratic, although not as much as people think, and it was designed to promote stability and peace. And your entire Constitution simply tells the American people what the government may not do to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's very important. There's nothing else like it in human history. Most constitutions are all about the powers of the state. Well, our Constitution describes in great detail what the state may not do to us. We've lost touch with all of that. And by essentially signing on for these wars of intervention, go back to Vietnam. We certainly went there under false pretenses and deluded ourselves into believing that we were somehow or another spreading democracy and a new liberal order, or whatever you want to call it, by killing 2 million Vietnamese. That didn't work out very well. And we lost a lot of credibility as a result of that. We then worked to bring it back. And you know, we finally did, I think, regain a lot of credibility, particularly in 1991, not just for military reasons, but the way we handled it diplomatically and our insistence that this was not a war of conquest, that we were not interested in annexing or holding on to Iraq or anything else. We were simply trying to remove it as a danger to the world's oil concentration and keep the oil flowing. That was it, really. So as a result, you know, we were in pretty good shape. Then we started this business of intervention after the fall or the collapse of the Soviet state system. We began deluding ourselves and to believe that we were the indispensable nation, that our rights, our values were universal when they never were and never will be. We lost our respect for other people's countries, other people's national interests, other people's cultures and way of life. It's been a disaster.
Well, right, exactly. But America today seems to be very good at running around the world attempting to bludgeon other nations into compliance with the Western liberal order, but at great cost to the proxy nations. And you've spoken about this. Look at the devastation of Ukraine. How many Ukrainian young men in particular lives have been lost, hundreds of thousands, where under the quote guidance, mostly of the United States of America. And my question to you, sir, is Israel now in a similar situation where the U.S. is willing to fight Iran to the last Israeli, for example, just as America wanted to fight Russians to the last Ukrainian? Is that a fair comparison, or is that a similar risk in your view?
Well, I think what we've got in Ukraine with regard to Israel is somewhat different set of circumstances. Israel was founded after the Second World War, came into existence as a state largely because Harry Truman breathed life into it. And the rationale at the time was twofold. Number one, the Jews just endured this horrible Holocaust. 6 million were systematically murdered, either in camps or across Eastern Europe. And then secondly, because Harry Truman's political advisors told him that if you recognize the independence of the state of Israel, we will have unlimited quantities of money at our disposal for the Democratic Party in perpetuity. Now, it turns out that they were largely correct. Enormous quantities of Jewish money have been poured into various political entities in the United States to maintain this relationship and sustain effectively Israel's stature and influence inside the United States. And that's worked very well. But at this point, we're a little different than we were, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you go back through Israel's previous campaigns, previous wars, Israel was always restrained by presidents who intervened, as Eisenhower did in 56, and said, you know, we're not going to underwrite your conquest of the Suez, in other words, of the Sinai Peninsula. And the Israelis had come into the Suez Project, along with the British and the French, who were interested in regaining control of the Suez Canal, and Eisenhower threw them out and said, no, and you Israelis cannot have the Sinai Peninsula. Again, in 1967, Lyndon Johnson supported them, but Lyndon Johnson also made it clear that there were limits to how much support he was willing to provide. Finally, you get Richard Nixon in 1973, when the Israelis initially were attacked by the Egyptians and the Syrians managed to throw them back. The Egyptians were the toughest nut to crack because they had simply crossed the canal and set up a defense, had not tried to maneuver. And the Israelis had enormous difficulties with that defense, but eventually they broke through and managed to cross the Suez Canal and come in behind the Egyptians. When that happened, Richard Nixon made it clear that's unacceptable. You're going to have to pull back across the Suez Canal, or we won't be able to negotiate an end to this. We might end up at war with Russia. And so the Israelis eventually withdrew and retired back behind the Suez Canal. And, you know, we got the Camp David Accords and built, at least for the past 50 years, a very good relationship between Egypt and Israel. Well, here we are again, and we're dealing with another Israeli government, only this time the government has said, we want to finally, once and for all, settle accounts with these Muslim Arabs in Gaza. It's not enough to destroy Hamas. We have to eliminate the foundation for Hamas. And that foundation are the 2.2 million Arabs living inside the Gaza Strip. And no one has stood up and said, I'm sorry, but eliminating the 2.2 million people from this Gaza Strip is unacceptable. We won't underwrite it. We won't support it. That is something that we have opposed repeatedly. We opposed so-called ethnic cleansing in Bosnia-Herzegovina. You know, we've opposed ethnic cleansing in Africa. How can we now stand up and support what effectively is ethnic cleansing of people in Palestinians in Gaza? So this is a tough nut to crack, because what's different today is that I think Mr. Netanyahu has more influence and authority on the Hill than President Biden.
Wow.
Biden's government is really lost. They don't seem to know what to do. Every time Blinken opens his mouth and makes some policy pronouncement, President Netanyahu contradicts him and tells him, absolutely not. That's not what we are going to do. Most recently, it was, in the event this war ends and Gaza is devoid of Hamas, then we're going to retain control of it. We'll police it. That is the Israelis. And Blinken had previously made a statement that they were looking for a different solution. It would not involve Israeli control of Gaza.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's pretty clear that thanks to the power and influence that Israel has won over many decades through its lobby in Washington, has paid off. And right now, Mr. Netanyahu is clearly in charge. And this is a very dangerous situation for a great power like the United States, because do we want to be dragged into a potential regional war with virtually everyone in the region?
That's a critical question. I completely agree with that line of reasoning there, but there are also domestic implications for this. So, for example, our mutual acquaintance, Michael Yon, he has been covering the wide open border and the how Mayorkas has funded camps, you know, in the Darien Gap and Panama, staging areas for an ongoing invasion of the United States. And then now, with the U.S. supporting Israel's ongoing bombardment of civilian targets, hospitals, universities, refugee camps in Gaza, we run the very real risk, and this is what I'd like your response to, the very real risk of many of the illegals in the United States becoming more activated or more radicalized if they happen to be, let's say, Palestinians or linked to Hamas or something. So couldn't there be a very real domestic risk of, you know, suicide bombers or what have you, because of the poorly thought out policies of the way the U.S. State Department is interacting with Israel?
Well, I think the answers to your questions are yes and yes. First of all, we don't even know who's inside the United States. We have no idea how many illegals are really here. I spoke to a couple of people who have to remain anonymous for obvious reasons over at Homeland Security. And I asked specifically, you know, the numbers that have been published say that we might have 8 million illegals in the country. And they began laughing.
Right.
He said, are you kidding? And I said, no, this is what's out. He said, well, we've got at least 28 million. Probably more, and went on to explain that 7 or 8 million have come across the border since Biden became president. Remember that most of the people you're talking about that we see on television are the people that we've caught, at least insofar as we've apprehended them and noted them, at least who they say they are, registered them, handed them a check for $2,350, and then a free ticket to wherever they want to go in the United States.
Yes.
But we don't know who they are. We don't know what they think. And it's very clear that no one in Washington particularly cares. You know, this whole notion of assimilation, which was really designed to be Americanization, has been thrown out. So no one has to assimilate. No one is going to be seriously interrogated about their origins and their connections and their beliefs. This is what's happened to us. So we're really on a suicidal path ourselves, but it's a different kind of suicide. It's assisted suicide, with the government assisting people to destroy us by overwhelming us internally with foreigners. And I would argue that this is going to become a real issue once we go into a severe recession, or worse, into a depression, which more and more people think is possible.
Yes.
So we may systematically disintegrate ourselves as a great power because we have no social cohesion, because we can't impose the rule of law, because we can't uphold the rule of law. Meantime, you know, we're sending forces over potentially to assist and support Israel. And most of us have nothing opposed to that, but those forces are not there for the purpose that you mentioned at the outset, to wage war against others. They're there to support the security and survival of the Israeli state. But what Mr. Netanyahu is now doing and his supporters are doing is they're saying, look, we have an opportunity. We can leverage American military power, which is doing nothing on the border and nothing to secure the United States. And we can leverage it to our heart's content to settle accounts with everybody we don't like or who opposes us in the Middle East. That's a very dangerous picture, because now we're talking about the Turks and the Iranians joining together with the various Arab states in what is coalescing into a military alliance aimed at Israel.
Yes. May I ask you more about, I mean, I want to respond to everything you just said there, but may I ask you about our country, our choice, a little bit more?
Sure. Are you? Absolutely.
I mean, I know that's a recent position there as CEO, but what ourcountryourchoice.com, that's the website again for the audience.
Right.
But what you're doing there is profound, because, you know, I tend to lean conservative politically, but I feel disillusioned about the GOP and the conservative party, and even in many ways, some of the decisions that Trump has made. And a lot of conservatives have been very interested in people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but then, you know, there's a debate about his positions with Israel, the Middle East, and so on. But the platform that you have at ourcountryourchoice.com seems to really find the most important middle ground that matters to the American people. And it's not affiliated with one side, one party or aisle or the other. Can you speak to how Our Country, Our Choice hopes to exert influence and help change the conversations?
Well, we do have a lot of members already. We've got 35,000 fully registered. We've got another 80,000 lined up who want to join. And bear in mind that it costs nothing to join Our Country, Our Choice. Now, we're not charging anybody anything. That's not what we want to do. We know these are hard times. We want Americans to join us, and then within the framework of our organization, to join what we would call action groups that are going to participate directly in efforts to deal with the major issues that I just mentioned. One of the reasons we did this is that we ran into lots of Republicans and Democrats who basically said, we go to vote, and regardless of whomever is elected, we get the same policies,
right,
over and over and over again. So is this thing we call the Republican and Democratic two-party system really viable? A lot of people are concluding it probably isn't. It doesn't mean anything. So how do we get something done? How do we exert pressure? How do we drive change? And when it comes to these conflicts overseas, a simple statement, we ask people, well, what do you think? Do you think that we should fight in other people's conflicts and wars around the world unless we are attacked? And they think about that and they say, well, you're saying we haven't been attacked and we're not under threat and we're going to go fight. I said, yes. They said, well, that's wrong. Well, of course it's wrong.
Right.
What are we doing those things for? So it's a very common sense, logical approach. And, you know, why aren't we spending trillions here at home to deal with the multitude of problems we have? We've lost an estimated $14 trillion over the last 20 years in these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere, frankly, also Syria and Libya. What could we have done with that $14 trillion? And look at our national sovereign debt, which it now presents a real threat. So, you know, all of this is bound up together. Then when you move beyond that, you start talking about immigration. Well, don't you support immigration? Yeah, I think immigration is fine. Well, do you like what we're doing in this country? No. Why don't you like it? Because we have no control over who comes in or goes out of the country. Well,
that's right.
Anybody can leave, but we have no control over whomever comes in. And all of these people are showing up in and around our cities. And so the cities and the states have to support them, because these people aren't showing up to do jobs. Now, is that because they're lazy or don't want to work? That's not what I said. There are no jobs for them. And once things get bad in this country economically and financially, and they have before, these people are in trouble because many of them will probably hold down jobs at very low wages that Americans will then need in order to survive. So what do you do with them? Well, FDR and Herbert Hoover deported something in the neighborhood, I think a total of 12 million people to Mexico. 9 million initially after the stock market crashed to open up jobs, and another 3.5 million under FDR, and then subsequently another 2.5 million under Truman and 1.5 million under Eisenhower. Well,
those were big numbers, especially in that day.
Exactly. And that was done. And what we're saying is we have to have viable police forces, viable military establishments, not woke organizations that are there to sort of satisfy someone's ridiculous notions of social engineering and social justice. Police exist to impose and enforce the law. Law is only meaningful if the police can enforce it. The same thing is true of the military. The military is only effective if it can fight. And that means it has to defend us, defend the continental United States and the American people. All of these things hang together. And that's really where we want to focus at our country, our choice. And I think it's going to work. And I think we're going to attract a lot more people. As I said, there's 80,000+ trying to get in right now, and we're having trouble keeping up the computer. I mean, you know, we have computers like everybody else has, and the site's crashing.
It's only going to get worse after this interview gets published, by the way. I have to apologize in advance. So let me tell the audience then, if you go to ourcountryourchoice.com, and if you have any difficulty, just wait 24 hours. Try it again. You know, I don't know how people sign up. Do they just, is there a sign up page?
Go to the website and then click your way through it. It'll give you instructions.
Okay.
Where you go, what you want to fill out, and give us all of your information. Whatever you tell us is going to be protected. We have our own servers. We have extensive security. And, you know, just keep something in mind. This is very important. We're never going to tell anybody how to vote. That's not what we exist to do.
Yes.
But we are going to try to inform people about what people running for office really think and what they are likely to do. Because all of us have voted for people on the assumption, well, so-and-so is a Republican, so-and-so is a Democrat. They get into office and how do they behave? As though they're foreign agents. Not right. Representing American national interests. So we want to keep people informed. We want to encourage them to be involved in these action groups that are going to aim at very specific things like the illegal human trafficking and the sexualization of children. I think it's going to work. These are early stages. We don't have all the answers. So we're receptive to what other people want to tell us.
Well, in fact, Colonel, if you're open to this invitation, After this, please put our producer in touch with your marketing team for Our Country, Our Choice. There are a number of ways that we can help spread the word on our platform, Brighteon and Brighteon.tv and so on. We'd love to help support that and help bring people to your cause, because it seems like, from what you're telling me today, it's a desperately needed common sense type of position. We have to defend what we have or we lose it. It's that simple.
And we really do need unity. There's too much division in the country. There are too many people at each other's throats. So we have to focus on the things that unite us. And if you're an American citizen who cares about his country and loves his country, the things I mentioned are those things that will bind us together.
Well said. And I'm so glad to hear this from you. Thank you for sharing that announcement with us today. Thank you for your analysis and for taking the time with us. You're always welcome back here. And again, put us in touch with your team, and we'll help get the word out about this.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Take care now.
Thank you.
Okay. That was Colonel Douglas McGregor, everyone. Of course, you are free to repost this interview on other channels or platforms. Thank you for your time and your interest in defending America today. And of course, this is Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. God bless you all. Thank you for watching today. Take care. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Colonel McGregor. A lot to unpack in that, and I'm really intrigued about that organization that he's now the CEO of. It's called OurCountryOurChoice.com, and I encourage you to go there and check it out and read about their platform. I did so, and I couldn't find anything that I disagreed with. I mean, if you go to their website and you just read what they talk about on their platform, by the way, they also mention reeling in big pharma as one of the key things. But here it is from their platform, quote, we devote ourselves to family, God, and country as the way to save our country, our children, and the soul of America. We believe that the three pillars of civilization are equal justice under the law. Yes. Cheap energy. Yes. That actually also translates into affordable food, by the way, and freedom of speech. Amen. They nail it. And then they go on. We believe in a merit-based society. How often have I talked about why we need a merit-based society? Based on character, intelligence, and work ethic. Yes, amen to that. American citizens must be able to start a business, master a profession, and increase their wealth based on merit, not race, not religion, not political affiliation, or government privilege or preference. Yes. And here are just some of the planks. They want to reduce and reorganize the key federal agencies such as the Department of Education, the NIH, the CDC, the FBI, and so on. They want to restrict the use of military power unless the U.S. is directly threatened. They want to eliminate the Federal Reserve. Yes! Yes! And restore sound money principles. Right. They want to reject open borders. They want to respect individual God-given rights. They disavow the woke movement and its cancel culture. They oppose sexual surgeries of children, like, you know, child mutilations. They disavow the quasi-religious climate change deindustrialization movement. Yes, amen, brothers. I'm getting all excited. This is like a rally or something here. I'm excited because I just found out about this organization today from Colonel McGregor, and I don't find anything that rubs me the wrong way about who they are. I don't know the people behind this, but I tell you what, I'm going to ask my producer to reach out and interview some people who are associated with or founded this organization, because I think it's amazing. I mean, this is exactly what we need. We need to get back to Christian principles. We've got to stop mutilating the children. We've got to end the woke bullcrap. We've got to have a merit-based system. Otherwise, the most incompetent people rise to the top, like, oh, I don't know, Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Joe Biden. I mean, come on. And Kamala Harris. I mean, oh my gosh, isn't she the poster child of the opposite of a merit-based society? I mean, come on. It's so obvious. We've got to get back to core principles here. And this organization, OurCountryOurChoice.com, they have elucidated these principles, I think, in a very compelling way. So anyway, I didn't mean to turn this into a giant infomercial for that organization, but I really like what I see about them so far, and I'll keep my eyes peeled and keep you posted. Moving on to other news, this is really great from AmmoLand.com. Federal judge stays the entire ATF pistol brace rule. This is a federal district court issued a nationwide stay preventing the ATF from enforcing its rule on pistols equipped with stabilizing devices. By the way, I've talked about this before, but in case you forgot, AR-15s, when they have a stock on the end of them, the barrel has to be a length of at least 16 inches, and there's a certain way to measure that in order for the ATF to consider it to be a regular non-NFA rifle. But if the barrel is shorter than 16 inches, let's say, you know, 12 or 14 inches, then they say, oh, that's a short-barreled rifle, and it requires special permission, special forms. You have to pay a tax stamp and so on. But for pistols, the barrels can be shorter than that. And so some innovative people in the firearms industry over the last several years, they came up with what are called stabilizing braces that can be attached to AR-15 pistols, which are designed to be fired with a single hand, if necessary, but can also be two-handed fire like any normal pistol. And the stabilizing brace is designed to attach to your forearm, and it can be used by people who have, you know, physical injuries or disadvantages, or veterans, or all kinds of people. In any case, the ATF decided that these AR-15 pistols with attached braces are short-barreled rifles, which means that they instantly made millions of Americans criminals, like felons. And myself as well, because, of course, I own a few of AR-15-style firearms with pistol braces, although I have removed those braces since this rule went into effect. So I'm not actually sitting around with braces attached at the moment. But the thing I like about this is that with these arm braces, you have a much shorter, more compact tactical firearm device for self-defense. And it's great for women and older people who don't have the upper body strength to fully arm themselves, you know, with a, I should say, full-length rifle, which is actually, it's heavier. There's more metal. There's longer barrel and so on. It's more difficult for people to hold up. So the arm-braced AR pistols were fantastic. And my favorite configuration, by the way, is a 300 Blackout AR-style pistol from a company called Maxim Defense. And in fact, if you go to MaximDefense.com, you can see what I'm talking about. But their best arm brace is what's called a PDW brace. PDW. I don't even know what that stands for, actually. But I've played around a lot of these, and the PDW brace is the best. And then they used to sell a firearm, you know, before the ATF got involved in all this. They used to sell a firearm that was an arm braced pistol in 300 Blackout that was just super sweet. I guess PDW stands for personal defense weapon. Yeah. That just came to mind. But anyway, that was the best configuration that I had ever seen. I mean, just ideal, smooth as silk. And then the ATF stepped in and, you know, kind of tried to destroy that whole thing. So not cool, right? Well, anyway, that has been stayed, at least for now. We'll see how long that lasts. But for the moment, nobody in America is required to comply with this ATF rule. And since the court issued this stay, it means that they believe that the plaintiffs in this case are likely to prevail, meaning that the ATF has overstepped its bounds, according to the opinion of the court. So as of right now, at least as at the current moment, of course, you should check your own local laws and so on. At the current moment, it appears to be legal for Americans to have an arm brace equipped AR style pistol in their possession. However, there are state laws that probably prohibit that in many states. So be sure to check your local situation before doing that. Personally, I'm not reattaching any arm braces until this whole thing is resolved. And what I'm doing instead is I'm running folding AR-15s. And one of the places you can get that is a company that is, from time to time, a sponsor of our platform, and they're called shieldarms.com. And they were kind enough to apply the Ranger discount code, by the way, to everything on their site. I'm pretty sure that's the case. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But literally everything on shieldarms.com is, at least as I understand it, is 10% off if you use discount code Ranger. And they have folding AR-15s, so that's the next best thing. And it's a folding stock. It's not an arm brace. It's a folding stock with a 16-inch barrel, and it's a really nice setup. That's where I got my Glock 43X, by the way, with the steel magazines that are the extra-capacity magazines. And I think I showed you that Glock in my studio one time or another. I have since removed the red dot optic off the top, off the slide of that, because I don't like optics on pistols. There are reasons why. Well, number one, it takes too long to find the dang red dot. I mean, I'm fast with iron sights. I don't want to spend time looking for red dots in the sight of a pistol. Red dots work great for rifles, because the axis is more lined up when you shoulder it correctly. But on a pistol, you could be fishing around for that red dot and wasting time and getting blown away by the enemy when you should be putting rounds downrange. So anyway, that's just me. I don't like optics on a pistol. And people say, oh, well, you know, it's more accurate with your optics. Hey, man, if it's time for me to put rounds with accuracy, that's what my rifle is for. I'm not just going to sit there and run the pistol all day and reload and hope something hits. No, I'm going to lay down some suppressing pistol fire and then get my rifle. And when I shoulder the rifle, you had better be leaving because those rounds are going right where I want them. Yeah. Okay, next important story to mention here is that Bitcoin is skyrocketing right now. It's up to almost around $37,000 a coin. And that's, you know, it's doubled, roughly doubled, at least since where it hit the lows in the last, I don't know, year, or maybe a little more than a year. It really got clobbered thanks to Sam Bankman-Fried and the FTX collapse. But Bitcoin is surging back, and also with it, other coins such as the privacy coins like Monero, which is a coin, you know, that I'm an advocate of Monero, and also a pretty big fan of Firo, F-I-R-O, because it's a privacy coin like Monero. And I think it's really fascinating and also kind of uplifting to me to realize that as the dollar is losing value, you know what's going up? Privacy crypto. Not that I endorse speculation in crypto, because as you know, I don't. And, you know, there are a lot of regulatory risks in crypto, but there are a lot of benefits to crypto. And it's just one of those things. You know, I've mentioned gold and silver, land, and privacy crypto. And I think that history is proving right now here in real time as this is playing out, you know, gold and silver are holding, if not gaining value, and crypto is holding and gaining value. So, you know, what's losing? The dollar. You know, what's losing value? Treasury bills. I mean, people holding U.S. Treasury debt are getting clobbered right now. Clobbered. Did you see in the last day? I don't know if you're following financial markets, but the difficulty of the U.S. Treasury in selling debt now, selling new debt, it's so crazy. They have to keep paying more and more. So the yields on treasuries keep rising. And that's why the U.S. is paying $1 trillion a year in interest on the debt right now. And that's not going to end well if you can do math, or especially compounding interest. That's not going to end well. So, hey, I don't want to be holding the dollar when the dollar collapses. I want to be holding gold, silver, land, crypto, ammunition, something along those lines. Now, okay, here's some other news that's a little shocking. Did you know that you can be a prisoner in your own car? So Representative Thomas Massie just tweeted this out in the last day. This is very disturbing. He says, the federal government has mandated that all vehicles sold after 2026 must have a kill switch that can disable your vehicle based on your driving performance. He said, my amendment to defund that unconstitutional mandate failed tonight. And there's a list that's been published of the 19 Republicans that went along with the defeat of Thomas Massie's amendment. So these 19 Republicans are Republicans that they want your car to be able to shut you down. Like, they want a kill switch in your cars. And this includes Nancy Mace, by the way, Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina. And, you know, 18 others, Brian Fitzpatrick, for example. This is not good that Republicans went along with this. Now, a kill switch in your car, the way this is supposed to work, and again, this is going to be mandatory after 2026. Every vehicle sold in America is going to have a kill switch in it. Now, do you think possibly that there are going to be problems with a car that has, you know, software code in it that decides when it should shut itself off based on when it thinks you're not driving well? Like, could there be any problems with that? Like, oh, I don't know, you're driving down a highway and it's windy. It's really, really windy. You know, I don't know, you're driving across Colorado or something, or Wyoming, and the wind is buffeting your car. You're getting blown off the road. You have to correct and get back on the road, right? And the car decides, well, you must be inebriated. You must be a drunk driver, even though it's just a windy day, or you're hitting a bunch of potholes or something, or you had to dodge some other car that got stalled out in the highway because it has this feature, right? So you had to weave and dodge and like, oh, I just avoided, you know, that accident. Wow, good thing. And then your car decides that you're drunk and your car, it just shuts off. Now you're stranded on the highway. You could be stranded in a bad place, like any highway near Los Angeles, for example. You get stranded on the highway in Los Angeles and, you know, the gangs just stop and loot you. They just swoop in like vultures and steal everything. They'll take your wheels and tires and your wallet and your cash. I can't wait for the lawsuits on this one. It's like, my car stopped in the middle of the highway? Did it get robbed? Yeah. For the car manufacturers out there, you're going to get your butts sued into oblivion over this. And nobody's going to buy these cars if they're aware of it. I will not buy a car with this feature because, again, how many times, if you bought a car in the last few years, how many recall notices have you received, by the way? I have a truck that's got like now 11 recalls on it, and I still haven't taken it in. But it's like all these recall notices. Ah, the code is all wrong. We screwed up, you know. It needs an update. Urgent, urgent. I had one. This truck, it actually, I guess the recall notices got so severe on it that it displayed an emergency message on the screen. It's like, you know, this vehicle needs urgent, you know, recalls. And it's all computer code. It's all computer code. You know, oh, the wheels are fine. You know, the engine works fine. It's this computer code. We have bad coders that just wrote crappy code. Well, if they're going to write crappy code, which is what they do, even if they work at Boeing, right? All the code for the jets, you know, the commercial airliners, it's all crappy code. Well, they're writing crappy code for automobiles too. So this feature is going to have crappy code. And there are going to be all kinds of cases where this thing shuts off and thinks that you're a drunk driver. And I'm even thinking about, what about physically impaired or can we say handicapped? Is that okay to say? I'm talking about somebody who is legitimately, you know, handicapped, like missing one or more limbs, and yet they've achieved a driver's license and they have a specially equipped vehicle, right? You've seen these vehicles. People can drive even with like no legs, or some people can drive with no arms. I mean, there are specially equipped vehicles to allow mobility for people who are physically challenged, or, you know, people who, veterans in many cases, people who lost limbs. Well, you know, you could imagine driving without all your limbs, your driving style might be a little less smooth, let's say. It's possible. And what if the computer on the car or the van or whatever it is decides, well, you must be drunk? Can you imagine the lawsuits that are going to come out of this where a handicapped person, again, I'm not even sure that's the right word, a physically, I apologize if I'm saying this wrong, a physically impaired person, someone who has lost limbs, gets stranded in their handicapped van on a highway because this feature that's been mandated by Congress and put into the vehicles, it turned off their van and left them high and dry on the side of the road. That's going to happen. And they should sue the snot out of those automobile companies. Sue the snot out of them, man. But what kind of an idiot builds a car or a truck that has its own internal ability to turn itself off based on whatever it thinks you're doing? And of course, this is all being pushed under the umbrella of safety. We have to make society safe. So safe. It's so safe. It's dangerous. You know, this was the whole thing with masks and lockdowns. It's going to be safe. We have to eliminate all risk. Folks, man, if you're driving on the highway, you're taking a risk. You're taking a risk. And you're taking a risk of other drivers plowing into you. It's got nothing to do with alcohol most of the time. Usually, it's people on their damn mobile phones. That's what it is. It's people dialing and dying. That's what it is. It's got nothing to do with alcohol most of the time. But sometimes it's medicated people. And people high on antidepressants and Adderall or whatever. High on all their medication. Or stroking out because they took too many vaccine jabs. There's a problem. You know, if you really wanted to make driving safe, you should ban driving while medicated. you know, if you've been vaccinated 12 times, you don't get to drive on public roads. You're a danger to the public, right? But they're not going to do that. They're going to have the car decide if it doesn't like the way you're driving. Wow. And, you know, they're going to call it, like, you know, smart car features. It's so smart. It can outsmart you. And, you know, the next step is going to be, you know, auto, like full auto self-driving smart car that can be remotely turned off by the government. And then they can summon the car to lock the doors and drive you to the nearest police station where you will be arrested for whatever crimes they make up against you. Yeah, that's exactly where this is going. You'll be a prisoner in your own car. They'll take control over it. You won't have any control. I mean, you press the brakes, nothing happens. You work in the steering wheel, turn right. Nothing happens. The car is under the control of the government. Big brother is driving your car. That would be worse than being a drunk driver, probably. You want the government driving your car? That sounds dangerous, genuinely. Hope this has extra airbags. And you know who these cars won't stop from driving? The idiots going down the highway at 30 miles an hour in a 70 zone. Those people. They're the ones who cause half the wrecks. And also, what about the people that are merging onto the highway and they just don't freaking accelerate enough? Hey, people, if the highway's traveling at 70 miles an hour, you need to be hitting about 60 to 70 when it's merge time. Don't be doing 30. You're doing 30 and you're trying to merge, you're going to cause an accident and the people behind you are losing their freaking minds. Sometimes that's me. But believe me, I'm not a road rager. It's just like, for God's sake, people, have you heard about acceleration? Just try to match the speed of the merging traffic. That's the point of the acceleration lane. That's the whole point of it. But these smart cars, they're not going to detect, you know, super slow people who cause accidents because, you know, the car would be like, oh, it's very smooth. It's very smooth. No, it's not. You're causing accidents all over the place. And what about all the illegals in Texas that think the shoulder is another lane? There's illegals. I don't know what it is. Do they drive like this, like in Mexico or Guatemala or wherever these people came from? They think the shoulder is a whole nother lane. You'll see, like, South American-looking people just cruising on the shoulder. No blinkers on, nothing. They're doing the regular speed. It's just like, hey, how you doing over there? You know that's a shoulder, right? It's like, oh, I thought this was another lane. It's incredible. And by the way, there's a very high correlation between people who drive on the shoulder and people who have no driver's license and no insurance because they're illegal aliens in America. And I was hit by one a few years ago, as you know, and crushed the back end of my vehicle at the time. And it's like, dude, you have any insurance? You have driver's license? No! No tengo nada. Like, okay. I mean, they just drive around. They don't have any documentation at all, but somehow they have pickup trucks. Amazing. But you understand the overall trend of where this is going, everything. It's going to be, you know, a government-controlled car. And then it's going to be a government-controlled house. It's a smart home. Everything in your home would be monitored first by the corporations. That's right now with all your Amazon Echo devices that I don't know why people buy spy devices and put them in their homes. But, you know, governments have backdoors and all that stuff, right? You know that. And then it's going to be, you know, your government-run robot vacuum with a camera that maps your home and looks for guns, you know, cruising around on your floors. I'm sweeping. And I'm also spotting AR-15s. Yes. Illegal firearms going to call the ATF. or who knows what they're looking for. Everything's going to be automated. You'll have no control over anything, not your home, not your power. You know, they'll turn off the power. Too much air conditioning for you. They'll turn off your refrigerator. You know, they'll control everything and monitor you all the time. And plenty of members of the GOP are all on board with this. And of course, every Democrat is on board with this. Every Democrat in the House is on board with this because they're all totalitarians. Anyway, that's the scoop. You see where everything is going. We're going to have to really, you know, stand for freedom. You're going to have to say no to the CBDCs. You're going to have to say no to the auto kill switch vehicle feature. You know, you're going to have to say no to the, I mean, frankly, you know, get rid of your Google phone, your Google Android phone. Get rid of that. You should be using a de-Googled phone. By the way, watch my shows at decentralize.tv. I interviewed Ramiro, the founder of abovephone.com, that sells, you know, de-Googled phones with its own, you know, open source operating system. And then the phone doesn't spy on you, by the way. Pretty cool concept. But check out all the episodes at decentralize.tv. And we have more episodes coming out again soon as well. But you're going to learn so much about living in a decentralized fashion, getting off the grid, having your own food, at least your own food redundancy or sustainability, money and assets, communications, you know, privacy, all these things that matter. Now, transportation when it comes to vehicles. So get informed. And there are many, many solutions that exist out there that you can take advantage of right now. And we cover a lot of them in that series, decentralize.tv. So check that out. And in the meantime, check out our Black Friday specials. It's running today, tomorrow, and Sunday at healthrangerstore.com/Black Friday. And don't forget about that big special pack we put together for you. It's called the Immune Support Super Pack. And it's over $140 worth of products for immune support together for just $99.95, only while supplies last, which will probably be a day or two. We'll see. And we put that together for you to say thank you for your support. Again, healthrangerstore.com. I'll have some additional updates for you over the weekend, no doubt. And then in addition to that, I've got some major interviews coming up for you next week that will blow your mind. And some interviews I've already done that will roll out over the next few days that will also blow your mind. So stay tuned for all that. Be sure to check naturalnews.com for published stories, and then also brighteon.com for interviews, as well as podcasts like this podcast, Brighteon Broadcast News. And we're about to roll out a brand new upgrade to brighteon.com. So if you go there and it looks totally different, maybe better, then that's what that is. So thank you for all your support, and we will be here bringing you clean food, clean nutrition, truthful news and information, red-pilling the planet as best we can, and working to help set humanity free from the bonds of these globalists that seem to just want to, you know, enslave or exterminate us all. Man, I mean, think about it. We're all in the crosshairs now, and only those who are informed and capable will probably survive this. So thank you for listening. God bless you all. And I'll be with you again, probably with an update tomorrow. Take care. Thank you for supporting us here at brighteon.com. And one way you can also help support us is by shopping at healthrangerstore.com. And we've got some really exciting new products to share with you here today. I've got samples on my desk, and there's three things to mention here. The one on the left, it's called Hydrate Elementals. It's a combination of coconut water powder, certified organic, and Aquamen, which is a mineral supplement that has some very special, unique properties. This is about mineral replenishment and hydration. You can learn more about it at our website, healthrangerstore.com. It's very popular, especially with people who do any kind of fitness or workouts. We've also got here on the right side a new trail mix product. This has coconut chips and nuts and, you know, almonds and walnuts plus raisins. It's a very delicious trail mix, and it's not just a bunch of junk and a bunch of crumbs and byproducts of nut processing. I mean, this is a high-end trail mix, all certified organic, all lab tested, including for glyphosate and heavy metals and more. Check it out at healthrangerstore.com. You're really going to enjoy this. And then finally, in the middle there, we have something brand new that I'm super excited about. It's a pine needle nasal spray. And that's in the green little small vials there with the nasal spray aerosolized tip on the top. I personally harvested the pine needles for this in Texas. There are loblolly pine trees because the pine needles are extremely high in shikimic acid. And then I oversaw the extraction of the shikimic acid and then the mixing of that into this formula. You can read the ingredients on our website. But this product is not being sold. It's only available for free as a bonus giveaway during our Black Friday sale event that's coming up. And watch for that. Join our email list. You'll get the announcements. You get, you know, all the links to participate in that. The only way that you can get that nasal spray with the shikimic acid using pine needles that I personally harvested in Texas is through the Black Friday event at healthrangerstore.com. And during that event, by the way, it's our biggest sale of the year. We're going to have the most products on discount, all kinds of amazing discounts, including on third-party products that are drop shipped and so on. It's wait till you see the catalog and the landing page for that. It's going to be quite impressive. But you definitely want to take advantage of that and get some of this pine needle nasal spray and look up shikimic acid too, because that's the molecule that is used to make Tamiflu, by the way. Very interesting fact. Also, one more thing. On our website, healthrangerstore.com, we now have available certified organic heavy cream powder. We've got it in pouches and number 10 cans. And this heavy cream powder is, of course, you know, laboratory verified. It's tested for, you know, heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology as well. And there's no junk in here. It's literally powdered heavy cream. It's not just maltodextrin and you know, a bunch of garbage with cream flavor. None of that stuff. This is the real deal. That's why it's not cheap, by the way. But if you want to add to your food storage pantry heavy cream, this goes a long way. And we also have, by the way, we have now organic white cheddar cheese powder also in number 10 cans and pouches as well. So you can make your own macaroni and cheese pretty easily by combining this cheese powder with the organic cream powder and some salt and pepper and some onion powder and get yourself some, you know, organic macaroni. And it's all done. You have a really nice meal. So take advantage of this at healthrangerstore.com, and that will also help support this platform. We thank you for your support, and I'm committed to bringing you more interviews, more content, more analysis each and every day that helps you understand what's happening in our world, helps you navigate it, and also, importantly, helps you survive it. Thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com and healthrangerstore.com. Take care.